Hey, it's Glenn Washington from Snap Judgment. And if you love what you're hearing, and I know you love what you're hearing, please consider becoming a KQED member. You get special access to cool events, behind-the-scenes footage, and so much more. Plus, you'll sleep better at night, knowing you did your part for the community you depend upon. It's in you. Please be in it. Visit donate.kqed.org/podcasts to sign up now. That's podcast with an S. Thanks.
From KQED.
Every year on April 18th, at 5:13 in the morning, San Franciscans gather at the corner of Market and Kearney Streets to remember.
Once again, you crazy folks have come together at this ungodly hour to remember and honor the memories of those hardy San Franciscans who survived being tossed from their beds 117 years ago this morning.
People come dressed up in period costumes, trying to inhabit the moment in 1906 when an earthquake with an estimated magnitude of 7.9 brought devastation to the city.
Wednesday, April 18th, 1906, 5:12 a.m. A great foreshock is felt throughout the San Francisco Bay Area.
San Franciscans startled awake, only to find their city burning.
Fires rage and spread throughout the city. They are not stopped until 74 hours later. Many of San Francisco's finest buildings collapse under the firestorms. Firefighters begin dynamiting buildings to create fire breaks.
But the fire kept leaping over the lines, traveling further west.
The Great Fire reaches Van Ness Avenue. Facing the decision to blow his city to pieces or watch it burn, Mayor Schmitz finally agrees to let the army create a massive fire break in the hopes that it can stop the raging inferno. Friday, April 20th, 1906, 5 a.m. The fire break at Van Ness finally holds and the westward progression of the inferno is halted.
It took more than 3 days to fully put the fire out. And then San Franciscans took stock. Nearly 80% of the city had burned. The great earthquake and fire of 1906 were devastating to everyone living in San Francisco at the time, including its several thousand Black residents. Bay Curious listener Allison Pennell started wondering about how this community fared after the earthquake when she saw an old photo in a museum booklet. It showed a group of Black San Franciscans standing at the top of Clay Street, watching the fire burn.
And I just started to think about that photograph and what would have happened after the earthquake. I know many people came over to the East Bay. They simply got into boats and got over here. And so I thought, how did that work? Because you couldn't just probably, as a non-white person, go to the Claremont Hotel and say, I'd like a suite. At that time, the discrimination was deep.
She wanted to know more.
I'm interested to know what Black San Franciscans did to survive after the 1906 San Francisco earthquake and how they reestablished themselves either in the East Bay or back in San Francisco.
Today on Bay Curious, on the anniversary of the big one, we'll hear some first-person accounts from those who survived the 1906 earthquake and fire. And we'll learn how their stories are still inspiring Black San Franciscans generations later. I'm Olivia Allen Price. Stay with us.
Support for Bay Curious comes from Sierra Nevada Brewing Company, committed to brewing things the right way since 1980, because when you're a family-run brewery, there's no other way to do it. Sierra Nevada Brewing Company, still family-owned, operated, and argued over. And be sure to stay tuned through the end of the show so you can play our monthly trivia game for a chance to win some cool prizes.
Hey there, this is Brittany Luce from NPR's It's Been a Minute. KQED's podcasts like The Bay, Bay Curious, Mind Shift, Right Nowish, and more all tell the stories of the Bay and beyond with reliable, human-centered journalism. They aim to inspire, make you think, entertain, and expand your understanding of the place you call home. Here's how you can support podcasting at KQED.
Showing your support is easy, and you can join Brittany in supporting KQED Podcast too at donate.kqed.org/podcast. That's donate.kqed.org/podcast.
Stories and photos of the devastation wrought by the 1906 earthquake and fire are all around us in San Francisco. But it's less common to see or hear explicit references to how the Black community fared after the quake. Bay Curious editor and producer Katrina Schwartz set out to learn more.
You can find all kinds of cool stuff at the public library.
So I was thinking, where does the ephemera live? Where do the things live that we can't touch? What are the lesser visited things of the library?
Tania Lunsford Lynx was recently an artist in residence at the San Francisco Public Library.
And then I found that there was an oral history project that had over 25 recorded oral histories.
She was transfixed by the voices of Black Americans describing life in San Francisco at the turn of the 20th century.
Yeah, we were here.
Tania and I are standing in front of a display case on the third floor of the main branch, busy library life bustling around us.
I wanted folks to kind of happen upon it outside of the elevator, so when folks kind of get out, they're struck by the photos that many of us have never seen of the 1906 earthquake.
Yeah, I mean, probably people have seen some of the photos, the fire and stuff like that.
Yes.
What's different about these ones?
These photos are different because they're featuring Black American folks who are here in San Francisco at the time of the 1906 earthquake. So you not only see the plume of the fires, the smoke in the back of the photos, but you also see Black San Franciscans at the forefront of the photos who are like dressed very beautifully. My name is Tania Lunsford Lynx. I'm a writer, an artist, an educator, and fourth generation Black San Franciscan on both sides.
For Tania, these photos were a revelation.
So even though my family has a deep history here, and even though we knew we were here, there hadn't been photo proof that I'd seen a lot.
As part of her residency at the library, she began digging into the archives kept here and stumbled across an oral history recorded in 1978 of a man named Aurelius Alberga, a Black man and a survivor of the 1906 earthquake.
And there certainly hadn't been stories in our own voices about the experience of being here in 1906 and prior to that. I felt a kinship pretty quickly because something about Alberga's tone reminded me of my grandfather's voice. And something about the quality of the audio is very appropriate for the time that it was recorded. And so you can like hear the hum of the machine. You can hear like background noises. Like I was automatically seated in someone's house listening to them tell their stories. And it was that kinship, that closeness, that sense of intimacy that I was looking for.
Yes, October 22nd, 1884.
And where were you born in?
San Francisco.
Now, how about your parents? Where were your parents born?
My father was born in Kingston, Jamaica. My mother was born in San Francisco.
And he was very chill, for lack of a better word, about surviving that earthquake.
Historian Dr. Albert Broussard recorded this oral history when Alberga was in his 90s. On the day of the great earthquake, Alberga was in his early 20s, sleeping in a room he rented at the corner of Commercial and Kearney Streets.
Aurelius Alberga is asleep in his apartment, which most likely was an SRO, a single room occupancy, and he lived there, and his father lived in the apartment above him.
And my father was living there, too. He had a room right upstairs over me. The quake loosened in one side of the building, collapsed. The door in those days opened just the opposite to what they do now. I couldn't open it, you see.
He, like, yells for his father to know where he is, and his father comes down and helps him get out.
After escaping his small room, Alberga and his father go their separate ways. Alberga is worried about the man he works for, who's blind.
Aurelius Salberger's job at that time is being a chauffeur for a man he calls Old Metzgar, who's a man that he works for, who's like wealthy, who's a blind man, and he like develops this relationship caring for him in different ways.
He lived on a barrel street between Stockton and Powell. The whole front side of the hotel had fallen out into the street and left exposed the rooms on that end, and he was right there.
And so Alberga's like, oh my gosh, I hope he's okay. And he gets up to Metzgar's apartment, and this man is sleeping.
He slept through it all, which was a blessing.
After heroically saving Metzger's life, he takes the old man to his mother's house. Old Metzgar is worried about savings he's got stored in a safe downtown, so he sends Alberga to retrieve the money. That errand takes Alberga all over town, and he watches as the city is destroyed. He recalls how the water mains were broken and firefighters struggled to contain the blaze.
They had no water, and they didn't have any holes long enough to draw water from the bay, as nothing could stop it, this one ahead.
It blew my mind that he could recall with precision the exact intersections of where things happened in San Francisco, particularly as a man of like more than 90 years old, because I'm also aware of like, yes, this was a trauma that he survived and he was able to recall with such clarity where these things happened.
Alberga had lost everything in the earthquake and fire, his home, all his possessions. He bounced around the city, staying with friends.
One of the things he did say was that like folks across like race and ethnicity were really welcoming to each other as far as like inviting folks to literally stay in their homes.
I don't think there are any people in the other place in the world that were as friendly as the old San Franciscans.
No one was as friendly as old San Franciscans. People were dragging their trunks down the road, nowhere to sleep.
People were dragging their trunks along the street and someone would come along and help them. They'd take somebody to your house you'd never seen before.
Folks opened up their homes to people they'd never seen before in their lives.
So that mutual aid and that care was something that Alberga named as something that was distinctly San Franciscan at the time, that it was a very friendly place at that time, particularly after this moment of crisis. And so that really stood out to me, too.
Elizabeth Fisher Gordon was just a little girl of 9 years old when the earthquake struck. Her family lived in a flat in downtown San Francisco. But by 1906, many Black San Franciscans had relocated to the East Bay in search of more space and less expensive housing. Her grandmother lived in Oakland, and Elizabeth had gone to stay with her for the Easter holidays, just before the quake.
And my mother came over later in the week and brought the rest of the children. But my father came over on the last boat before the earthquake hit to my grandmother's. I was so sure that was my fault because I didn't kneel that night before I said my prayers. I got in the bed and said my prayers because it was so cold. But I didn't tell anyone that that was my fault that the earthquake hit.
Elizabeth remembers all the chimneys in Oakland falling down during the earthquake. As morning dawned, chaos reigned, and authorities wouldn't let Elizabeth's father return to San Francisco on the ferry. He had to get special permission to go check on their house.
And when he went over, he found out that there was a whole lot of damage. But he went to the house and got a suitcase and put some things in it, never dreaming the fire would reach there, you know. And some of the things he brought were so insignificant, my mother thought, I'll never forget her repeating, he brought that book, you know.
Her father returned to Oakland, where his family was, and their home on Jones Street was consumed by the fire. Elizabeth says her family was lucky to be able to stay with her grandparents in Oakland until her father was able to purchase a plot of land in the Mission to build them a new house. She says many Black San Franciscans tapped into networks of friends and family in Oakland.
And then the people from San Francisco came over here when their houses burned down and they took care of them over here. Red Cross, and they set up temporary lodging and what have you for the different people.
Meanwhile, tent cities sprang up in parks around San Francisco, housing 200,000 people who had become homeless overnight. People set up outdoor kitchens and cooked together. Tania Lunsford Links documented Black San Franciscans among these scenes in her exhibit.
The first photo that we see is a photo of two young Black people, children, who are sitting in the grass, and you see tents, and you see a clothing line up behind them, and you see a little stove for cooking as well. And this is a campsite that was set up in Golden Gate Park because folks had lost everything.
A PBS documentary called The Great 1906 San Francisco Earthquake paints a desolate picture of life in the aftermath.
Standing in bread lines, meat lines, soup lines, any kind of a line became the central activity of life. Everyone had to do it.
And anybody not in line was put to work rebuilding the city.
It was said that in many places, the debris was not even allowed to cool. And bricks were pitched from lots when still as warm as muffins. Volunteers on the cleanup crews took up the refrain, "In the damnedest finest ruins, I'd rather be a brick than live anywhere else but San Francisco." The great cleanup had begun. An estimated 6.5 billion bricks were carted away or cleaned of mortar to be reused in new buildings.
People who lived through these times remember it as a swift recovery. Alfred Butler was a Black teenager living in Oakland at the time of the earthquake. He took a mule and cart all the way down to San Jose and around the bay in order to see what had happened to San Francisco for himself. He recalls seeing a lot of rubble and the biggest buildings knocked down. But over the following months, the recovery progressed quickly.
Right away. It didn't lose no time at all. And in a year's time, San Francisco was pretty well cleaned up. And they started building.
At the turn of the 20th century, Black San Franciscans lived in neighborhoods scattered throughout San Francisco. But many single men were concentrated in hotels downtown, like Aurelius Alberga, who we heard from earlier. Alfred Butler says after the earthquake, the Western Addition became the hub of Black life. That's where his brother moved.
After the earthquake, everybody moved out to Fillmore Street. All the business on Fillmore Street just booming.
San Franciscans came together after the quake, and people from all walks of life helped one another in that moment of crisis. But the oral histories of these Black Americans who survived it show that as the city rebuilt, it went back to the de facto racism that ruled it. Butler says good jobs were still reserved for white people, while Black people struggled to find menial ones.
It was hard to get a job. We had a tough time getting a job. A menial job like washing windows or running errands or something like that, running an elevator or something like that. But it was hard to get a job.
For Tania, the photos of San Franciscans living in tents, cooking outdoors, waiting in line for basic necessities, are eerily similar to scenes on the streets of the city today.
Looking at these photos, I begin to see the past speaking to the future and the future speaking to the past.
And as a Black person, Tania sees echoes of her San Francisco in the oral histories she combed through. A small Black community fighting to stay in a changing city. The devastation of displacement and loss. But also the love of this place and the tenacity to survive. It's all too familiar. Her poem, We Were Here, is an ode to the Black community in San Francisco, which stretches from the gold rush to now. Here's an excerpt.
We were here, already living fantastical lives, already saving the best for the present, already studying the contours of the city. The bay knew us. This ocean was salted with our knowing already. We knew the feeling of firm ground before the shaking. We knew stability. The ground knew the planting and rising of our feet like a dance. We were already sending for each other, extending a fishing hook south and pulling each other up with calloused hands. We were already spinning tales about this mass of fog. We were already making home here.
That story was brought to us by Bay Curious editor and producer Katrina Schwartz.
But, of course, we were here, living in our signature ways. Of course, when the earth shifted, we went looking for who could be lost in the cracks. Of course, it made for lore. Of course, we were doing the fantastical feat like a dance. The earth cracked open and we kept time. An offering of our survival, we kept on living.
Tania's exhibit is no longer on display at the library, but you can see all the photos she used and read her writing on the project's website. You can find a link in our show notes or on baycurious.org. Special thanks to the San Francisco History Center, part of the San Francisco Public Library, for letting us use the oral histories in their archive, and to the San Francisco African American Historical and Cultural Society, who co-sponsored the original Oral History Project. There's still time to vote in our April voting round. Here are your choices.
I was recently at the Morcom Rose Garden in Oakland and saw three different official Oakland signs that read, quote, "No glitter." I would love to know what happened at the Rose Garden to warrant so many signs.
Yesterday, I walked with a fellow science teacher on the Great Highway. We commented on the blackish sand made of iron filings. Where does the iron come from?
Who are the DeYoungs? I think they have some crazy stories.
Vote for which question you think we should tackle next at baycurious.org. While you're there, sign up for our monthly newsletter, ask your own question, or get lost listening through the Bay Curious archive. Bay Curious is made in San Francisco at member-supported KQED. Our show is made by
Katrina Schwartz,
Christopher Beal,
Catherine Monahan,
and me, Olivia Allen Price. Additional support from
Jen Chien,
Katie Springer,
Caesar Saldana,
Maha Sinad,
Holly Kernan,
and the whole KQED family.
I'm Olivia Allen Price. We'll be back next week.
Hi, Bay Curious listeners. Are you ready to play May's trivia game? Every month, we read a question here at the end of our episode. You can give us your answers over at our website, kqed.org/baycurious, or just click the link in the episode description. Out of the correct answers, we'll randomly choose one lucky winner to receive a cool prize package with Bay Curious swag and Sierra Nevada goodies. Okay, our question for the month is, the world's longest-running pillow-fighting contest was held from 1966 to 2006 in what Bay Area town? Our trivia quiz is made possible by Sierra Nevada Brewing Company. Good luck!
Hey there, it's Olivia Allen Price, host of Bay Curious, the podcast. KQED Podcasts wants to thank listeners like you whose support makes this podcast possible. If you want to help us continue to make great content, visit donate.kqed.org/podcasts. That's donate.kqed.org/podcasts. And thanks.